Good morning. This is Brian Trumbor with your week in review for Saturday, January 22nd. I think my cold is finally over after about 2 months. Let's talk about Wall Street and China. I've always read that Chinese President Hu Jintao was a humorless, emotionalist figure, and Americans got to see this firsthand this week. I wrote of the important points in the U.S.-China relationship extensively in my preamble for Hu's visit last time, so I won't repeat the same ones today. But China's been front and center the past 10 years, and it will remain so the next few decades, so plenty of time each week to dissect the issues as they come up. For now, though, I got a kick out of those complaining that Hu was accorded too many niceties and that President Obama wasn't tough enough on the Chinese leader. Oh, come on, it's called diplomacy. And Hu was our guest. It's also become quite clear that on some issues, such as North Korea, Obama was plenty tough with Hu behind closed doors, and in his public statements, such as during that bizarre press conference that I caught, while Obama could have been a little more forthright on the issue of human rights, I'm not going crazy as to his handling of the topic. Seeing as I'm the one who has said for years that the Dalai Lama is immensely overrated and that more time has been wasted on this topic and approached the wrong way to the Tibetan supreme detriment, it would be a bit disingenuous of me to start blasting Obama for some mild public statements. It takes a while before we know what really transpired behind the scenes, and I'm confident that by year-end, Nobel Prize winner Liu Xiaobo will be released from prison, assuming the overall Chinese-U.S. relationship is stable. And if I seem a little insensitive to the topic, it's because I have something different that is troubling me, the growing sense that the real fear for the West when it comes to China could be the potential for a military coup. I admit I've given this idea zero thought until some extensive reading on Hu, as well as the treatment of the far more charismatic Premier Wen Jiabao, the grandfatherly figure who was the public face of China during its many natural disasters. Neither seems to be very well respected internally. Hu leaves his Communist Party leadership post next year, and I know little of his anointed successor, but the rumblings of the military, including not filling their own president in on the J-20 stealth fighter jet test while Defense Secretary Gates was meeting with Hu in Beijing, are disturbing. For now, when it comes to the U.S.-China relationship in terms of spheres of influence, the White House must do all it can to solidify our relations with Japan and South Korea, which we appear to be doing, and with these two helpfully recognizing strong relations with Washington are definitely in their best interest. But this was also a week that, along with the pageantry, China released some critical economic data, and because it was so good, it unsettled the market some. China reported that GDP for the fourth quarter was a better than expected 9.8% and 10.3% for all of 2010. You don't have to believe these figures, but they are darn close to being accurate. Retail sales for December rose 19.1% over year-ago levels. Urban fixed investment, which is highways, subways, railways, airports, etc., rose another 24.5% in the month, and industrial production was up 13.5%. Pretty spectacular. But worrisomely, China's consumer price index rose 4.6% in December, though this was down from November's 5.1%, as I said it would be. And producer wholesale prices rose 5.9% in the month. For all of 2010, China's CPI was up 3.3% and the PPI up 5.5%. The Chinese government recognizes that nothing can bring about the dreaded public unrest faster than inflation, and leadership says combating it is goal number one. But many now believe China is falling helplessly behind the curve and should have been hiking interest rates anew long ago to slow the economy rather than targeting bank reserve requirements. China is afraid of killing the economy and throwing tens of millions out of work, so they're trying to finesse their way to a soft landing. In the meantime, housing prices continue higher, up 6.4% last year when they should have been flat, if not down slightly, on their way to the needed 20% or so correction. But it's not as if the government isn't trying in this sphere as they keep hiking down payment requirements, which is what Washington failed to do during our bubble. So no, I'm not as sanguine on China's economic prospects as I was last year. If they can manufacture the soft landing, I'm pretty sure that, personally, my investment in Fujian will do darn well. If they can't get a handle on inflation before it's too late, well then, Shanghai, we have a problem. At least the Chinese media ate up the summit, heaping praise on President Obama, which is most rare for these state-controlled folks. The lead editorials called it a, quote, masterstroke in easing tensions between our two great peoples, as they put it, and the summit put the U.S. and China on an equal footing, say the opinion makers over there. I just want to know what the Chinese generals are saying to each other behind closed doors. I also wonder which Americans have been selling out their country and passing along key secrets, which is undoubtedly occurring on the defense front. It's happened in the past, and I've spelled it out. It's a company whose name is five letters and begins with an L. In Euroland, where everything is like a picture postcard until you look below the surface or examine the books, the feeling that the debt crisis is manageable seemed to predominate again this week. Maybe Germany is doing well, but the news out of Britain this week was hardly encouraging, with the biggest drop in December retail sales over November ever, though they do have the excuse of awful weather. Nonetheless, it is what it is. And Britain's housing market is the pits, with mortgage approvals now at the lowest levels since March 2009. Plus, Britain has a little inflation issue, and their austerity program has yet to really kick in. Then there's Spain, which is begging private investors to come in and prop up their savings banks, which are loaded to the gills with bad real estate loans. I saw hedge fund giant David Tepper on CNBC Friday morning, and he said these banks, CAIS, had solid lending standards. I beg to differ, as I've spelled out for 6 years regarding the likes of Spain and their housing issues. In fact, this week there was this line in a journal piece on how the government there knows the CAIS need to be bolstered, but the government can't afford to dump even more of its own capital when it has a massive potential liquidity crisis of its own. Quote, the government will wait to give any ultimatum to the CAIS until it sees the results of detailed disclosures about the type and quality of loans its savings banks have made to the real estate sector, said people close to the matter. Those will be made public for the first time later this month and in February, as Wall Street Journal. So we'll see. All I know is that Spain's real estate issues are widespread, both in commercial, which Tepper admits is a problem, and residential. When it comes to Europe, it continues to be about transparency, pure and simple, and there is little. As PIMCO's Mohamed El Arian noted, there's a reason why the private sector is exiting the region. In reading the Irish Independent this week, I saw this tidbit, as reported by Sarah Collins, concerning an exchange between European Commission Chief José Manuel Barroso and member of the European Parliament Joe Higgins of Ireland, Higgins accusing the EU of making vassals of Irish taxpayers through the high interest rate being charged Ireland on the EU's bailout package. Problems of Ireland were created by the irresponsible financial behavior of financial institutions and a lack of supervision in the Irish market, said Barroso, anger rising. Europe is now part of the solution. It was not Europe that created this fiscally irresponsible situation and this financially irresponsible behavior. Higgins countered that the bailout package was, quote, nothing more than another tool to cushion major European banks from the consequences of the reckless speculation on financial markets. Far from being a bailout, your IMF and EU mechanism makes vassals of Irish taxpayers to European banks and enslaves the working people of Europe to the markets who lead you around by the nose, Higgins added. It is a vicious weapon dictated by markets masquerading as benign. Ah, yes, the European disunion, to be continued. Turning to the U.S., here are the two key figures to know when contemplating the impact these severe issues facing states and local municipalities will have on overall growth in America over the coming years. The states have total budget deficits of $140 billion, and the state and local pension shortfalls are estimated to be $2.5 trillion. So another figure said $3.5 trillion. With Republicans now in charge of the House, regarding the state budget deficit issue, the new House majority has weighed in. Absolutely no bailouts. Fed Chief Ben Bernanke had weighed in earlier this year saying, don't look to us either. The situation with the states is so bad, some Republicans are looking at introducing legislation that would allow the states to go bankrupt as a way of restructuring their pension and health care obligations. Though the odds of this then getting through the Democratic Senate are nil, let alone overriding an Obama veto. Yes, it's the public-private debate writ large, and as I've been emphasizing the past few months, it's going to be wrenching. Just here in the New York area, Mayor Michael Bloomberg called for zero salary increases in his latest budget without commensurate benefit and pension reforms. His number one priority these days is to raise the retirement age for city workers, which for non-uniform personnel is ridiculously low. Upstate in Albany, new Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo is threatening 10,000 layoffs, which still is just 5% of the state workforce. Cuomo is determined at the same time not to raise taxes. That's not the case in Illinois, as you've heard, where income and corporate tax rates are going up 67% and 45% respectively in their attempt to deal with humongous debts. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to get the big picture. Regardless of the method taken to address the problem, layoffs, benefit cuts, tax hikes, or some combination of the three, the issue facing the states and local government are going to be an impediment to growth. No doubt there are some good things happening in the U.S. economy these days. Corporate profits hit a record in the third quarter, and the fourth quarter earnings season is generally off to a great start. Business spending, CapEx, is picking up virtually across the board, it would seem. Tax revenues are rising. And hopefully I'm very wrong on Europe, and that continent grows at a 4% clip rather than 2%. And hopefully Asia and Latin America get over their inflation issues without too much pain to their nascent middle classes. But boy, is that threading the needle worldwide, and it ignores all potentialities on the geopolitical front. This Tuesday, though, is President Obama's State of the Union address, and the focus will be not only on boosting the economy, but shared responsibility, as his advisors are putting it, on the deficit. Republicans, meanwhile, are already fighting amongst themselves as to the amount of deficit reduction that should be in play this first year. This proved to be one of the more interesting weeks in some time on Wall Street, and that the Dow Jones rose an eighth consecutive week, 0.7% to 11,871. But all the other major averages lost ground, with small and mid-cap stocks, as well as the NASDAQ, getting creamed. NASDAQ lost 2.4%, while the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index plunged 4.3%. Apple and Google reported super earnings, but by week's end, both stocks had reversed in a big way, leading the NASDAQ down, while General Electric and IBM had great weeks based on their very solid earnings reports that helped power the Dow to its gain. Meanwhile, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America disappointed, while Morgan Stanley surprised to the upside in the financial sector. There are also all sorts of indications, including net new client assets from the likes of Charles Schwab and TD Ameritrade, that speak to the fact the U.S. retail investor is back, but much of the renewed activity is from active or day traders. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday for further details and a lot more commentary. Go to stocksnews.com and click on Week in Review. Have a great week. Take care, and go Jets.